Welcome to You Drink Indiana Radio on WFYI HD2 The Point. I'm your host, Jolene Ketzenberger. This week on Eat Drink Indiana Radio, we've got information on Chocolate Fest, the new Market District supermarket, and a segment on how food, community, and culture all fit together. We'll start out today by talking with Suzanne Literal of Literally Divine Chocolates. Then we'll hear from Tom DeVries of the new Market District supermarket that just opened in Carmel. And we'll also have a shopper's reaction from local caterer Vicki Higuera. And then we'll be exploring the Irvington Farmers Market, which wraps up its season on Sunday. I'll walk through the market with local chef Alan Sternberg of Cerulean Restaurant in Indianapolis, and we'll be discussing food, neighborhoods, community, and culture. So stay with us for more here on Eat Drink Indiana Radio on WFYI and WFYI.org.
Eat Drink Indiana Radio is powered by EatDrinkIndy.com, where Central Indiana turns to learn about food from farm to fork and drink from grains to glass.
Chocolate for a good cause. It's tough to beat that. Chocolate Fest returns to Indianapolis next Saturday, October 17th at the Dallara IndyCar Factory at 1201 West Main Street in Speedway. Proceeds from the festival benefit local arts and education programs, which was a natural fit for one local chocolatier who is a former dancer. Suzanne Literal of Literally Divine Chocolates will be at Chocolate Fest next week with her organic and vegan chocolates and toffees and truffles. But I stopped in at her Greenfield shop recently to talk chocolates and Chocolate Fest.
Yeah, we're gearing up for Chocolate Fest, and I don't know if I should leak the information out now. I was talking with a colleague of mine earlier, and we were trying to decide, okay, I'm going to do caramel and toffee, and I'm thinking, okay, well, okay, that word's leaving me. So it's going to be vegan.
So your Chocolate Fest creation is vegan.
It's going to be vegan and soy-free. And, yeah, for all those people with allergies and whatnot. And so, I don't know, I might do a truffle and a caramel. Maybe just kind of mix it up. So, yeah, maybe I'll just leave it at that. Because I still have like a week and a half to, you know, get this together. Yeah.
So if you tell us just a few details about Chocolate Fest. It's at the Dallara Factory in Speedway, right?
Yes, it is. It is a week from Saturday, so it's the 17th. Dallara Car Factory, yeah, from 12 to 4, and there's going to be at least 25 vendors. Oh, yeah, there's going to be a lot, yeah.
So it's a lot of chances to try chocolate, right?
Absolutely, yeah. That's the place to go if you love chocolate. Oh, yeah, you be there or be square, really.
We've been talking with Suzanne Literal of Literally Divine Chocolates. Chocolate Fest tickets are available at chocolatefestindy.com, and we'll be back with more from Suzanne and Literally Divine here on Eat Drink Indiana Radio on WFYI and WFYI.org. Well, chocolate is always in season, and you'll find local chocolatier Suzanne Literal of Literally Divine Chocolates at the Indy Winter Farmers Market when it returns for the season next month. But you can also find her at her shop, which she shares with another chocolatier, a bit of an unusual arrangement, but one that works out for Literally Divine and J. Evelyn Confections. I stopped in at Greenfield Chocolates recently to talk with Suzanne on how she got into the chocolate biz, how it's grown, and where it's going.
When I started the business, I was thinking, there's no way I'm doing a farmer's market. Although I thought about Trader's Point Creamery during the wintertime when they had one. And I actually did start doing that early on. And then summer came along, and I was just advised to bring a cooler. I was like, oh, well, I guess I could do that. Yeah. So, yeah, that started this whole thing. And then I realized, oh, wow, what a great service for the community, local food. It's just, you got to be more connected with, you know, people, and people have to know where their food comes from, basically. And my focus with being organic and vegan, and that was just a really good fit for me. So, yeah, and I'm doing the Any Wonder Farmers Market, and, I unfortunately only have time to do, like, one market, like, all year round now. It's just kind of gotten to the point, but I want to stay connected and have a presence. And
that's right, so organic, and you have a vegan line, too. So tell me a little bit about the vegan line.
Yes, I initially started doing organic chocolate, and then I was around, you know, a lot of associates of mine when I was a dancer. They were vegan, and I started thinking, hey, wait a minute, what if I, you know, came up with a vegan alternative to what I was doing? So that led to a whole line. It's like everything I come up with, whether it's a truffle, a toffee, or caramel, okay, how can I make this vegan? That's always my next thing. So, yeah, it's continues to grow. Yeah.
Well, tell me just a little bit about how the business developed, you know, and how you decided to get into the chocolate business.
Yeah, I was living in Nashville, Tennessee at the time, and I was so excited because I was always a chocolate freak, and Nashville, Tennessee was having a chocolate festival, and I was so excited. I was like, oh my gosh, it's close by. Okay, so I attended, and they were passing out recipe booklets, so I grabbed one, and I was looking through it, and there was a recipe for brandy chocolate truffles that I can remember it like it was yesterday.
That sounds great.
Yeah, it was great. And, you know, at the time, I was like, well, wait, maybe I should try the recipe. Oh, wow. But anyway, so I made it, and I took it into coworkers, and yeah, it was received fairly well, and, you know, I was like, I mean, yeah. And eventually, I introduced it to my family when I went back home to visit at Christmas time, and they decided I wasn't allowed in again unless I brought truffles with me. It kind of mushroomed. I was then thinking, okay, well, this would be great for Christmas gifts. I don't have to worry about shopping that much. That's how the whole thing started, really. And it grew. Yeah, people eventually started encouraging me. They're like, why aren't you selling this? Yeah, I mean, and it came down to, like, these two women. And this is around about 10 years ago or so.
Customers of yours?
Yeah, kind of. Friends, okay. Really. They got a hold of my toffee. I gave one. One of them was a gift, and I think one I gave as a gift to someone, and then they got a hold of it. And so both these women don't even know each other. They were kind of bugging me to, like, sell it. Okay. One of them said, you know, if I knew the recipe, I would sell it right now. And, of course, that kind of lit a fire under me. I was like, oh, okay, maybe I should jump on this. Okay, now how can I streamline things so I can do this, you know, for, like, the long haul? Because I decided, okay, if I'm going to go through with this, it's not going to be, like, a fly-by-night thing.
So you were into chocolate.
So, yeah, I made a commitment.
So how did it grow from there?
Well, you know, I started out in a shared kitchen at Carmel that doesn't exist anymore. And I started, you know, the farmer's markets. Good Earth was my first customer. They're sweet people. And orders if they came up. And fortunately, I was starting to do enough farmer's markets and event, and I would pick up another retailer here and there. And so it's kind of a slow grow process because I want to do this all with my own money. And so but it's continuing to grow, and it just amazes me sometimes. Yeah.
Now, how do you develop the recipes? Is it a lot of trial and error, you know, trying to get, you know, all organic ingredients and vegan recipes as well? It seems like it might be a big challenge.
Yeah. And the organic part is not that challenging now. It used to be I'd have difficulty accessing some of the ingredients I want because they would be sold in such small quantities. And eventually I found, you know, places, people, whatever, that sold larger quantities. So, yeah, anyway. And then the vegan part, yeah, that was a little challenging, some of it. Like the truffles, my husband says I'm an engineer, especially with the toffee, because, yeah, that took some work. Trial and error, I don't give up. That's the one thing that people notice about me. If I'm trying a recipe and it doesn't work, and I try, like, four times, it doesn't work, and, like, okay, wait, I'm just going to give this a rest for now, but I come back to it because I just have to make it work. That's all. Yeah, and I do eventually do it. Yeah, I'll figure out a way.
We've been talking with Suzanne Literal of Literally Divine Chocolates. She'll be at Chocolate Fest on Saturday, October 17th. Her shop is located at 15 West Main Street in Greenfield, and you can find Literally Divine on Facebook as well. Seen a lot of specialty grocery stores open in the Indianapolis area recently. The latest is Market District from the Giant Eagle Store Company. Now, how is this one different from the other grocery stores that have opened in the area? Well, first of all, it's huge. At 120,000 square feet, the new Market District gourmet grocery store that recently opened in Carmel at 116th Street and Illinois Street is more along the lines of a supersized discount store more than a supermarket, at least in size. Inside the store, you'll find all the regular grocery store items, along with specialty areas that go way beyond the typical deli or bakery. There's even a chef station where you can get your just-picked-out meat or fish cooked to order to go. Oh, and there's a full-service restaurant as well, along with lots of other departments, health and beauty aids, bulk items. You can even get your hair done. I went to the opening day event at the store along with a food industry veteran to check things out. Market District Senior Vice President and General Manager Tom DeVries filled me in on what's different about this Market District compared to other locations. And caterer, busy mom, and frequent grocery shopper Vicky Higuera offered a reaction. It's the experience, right, that seems to make the difference, maybe.
Yeah, absolutely. And experience for us isn't about how fancy the store is or how big it is or all the products that we can put inside of it. The experience really is about the people. And the people that have passion for serving our guests, people that have passion for food, and a true energy for providing our customers unparalleled service. And those are the key pillars of what Market District is about. They'll continue to be that way because people can buy things anywhere, in stores, online. They can get products anywhere. But to truly have that connection with the people for us is the most critical component.
But now all the products and all the services don't hurt, right?
Oh, absolutely. And interestingly enough, we've had Market District the format, the brand, alive for about 10 years. This particular store has over 10 brand new concepts that aren't even available in any of our other stores. So they are first for not only the Carmel, Indianapolis market, but they're first for us as a company.
Now so, tell me what those brand new things are.
Sure. So we'll just kind of start at one side of the store and work around the perimeter. So the first thing, as you'll notice, when you look at the front of our building to the left, we have a full-service farm-to-table restaurant called Table. It's all about chef-inspired cuisines. It's all about using the bounty that we have in this 120,000-square-foot, what we call pantry, that actually can serve as a restaurant. There is no other restaurant that can provide or has that type of resource at their disposal.
So the restaurant is a big thing as part of one of the new concepts, right? What else do you have that's new?
So once you move out of the restaurant and you move into to the larger portion of more of a traditional shopping experience, we have a number of new concepts in our prepared foods area. We produce about 80 to 90% of the items that you'll see in our prepared cases and our gourmet foods cases right here at the store.
So you're making them from scratch?
Absolutely. We have a full staff and we have a full kitchen that supports that. We have a new catering service that's connected in a banquet operation that we're sitting in here today.
Oh, sure. So this room could be rented out, right?
Absolutely. We actually have 6 rentable spaces as part of us where we can hold private parties and events. We can seat up to 200 folks up here. So the banquet operation, the approach that we're taking to the catering business is new. And prepared foods, we have a new chef studio where we're actually taking ideas from folks that are on our team and presenting those items and rotating those on a daily and weekly basis. We'll be coming up here shortly with Oktoberfest items. We hired a young lady that's an immigrant from Germany, came across back with her husband, who's in the military. She's created our entire Oktoberfest menu of all authentic German foods for the month of October. So just little things like that. We have an area where we'll actually prepare your meat or your seafood purchase free of charge.
So I could pick out my salmon and then someone would cook it for me?
You bet. You absolutely. And we have about 10 different seasonings, butters, and sauces that can accompany that, all made from scratch right here in the store. We have what we call a chopping block concept, which is new, where we have pre-cut veggies so you don't have to go home and prep your own peppers and other items. You can actually buy those pre-cut, pre-washed here. We also have meal kits where we have all the components pre-portioned, pre-packaged with a recipe on the exterior, and you can actually make that from scratch at home but use the shortcut of us prepping for you. And we're introducing in another 2 weeks a concept called Fresh in 30, which is actually a family-sized portion of those. Those will be available here within the next 14 days. And then we've introduced new to the market as well a whole new line of value-added meat seafood pre-marinated using all natural, no preservative added ingredients, very clean label. That's a whole new product line for us. We've added, now kind of shifting over to the beer, wine, and spirits area, we have a walk-in humidor where we have over 100 different selections of top-line cigars for those of the folks who enjoy that. Continuing to walk around the store, we've added a whole new beauty bar concepts. We've added 25 new cosmetic, high-end cosmetic lines, some of which, like Serenity and Scott, that are absolutely 100% unique to us in the entire state of Indiana. In the salon also, we actually have a salon where we do blowouts, facials, full makeovers. We have three or four licensed estheticians on staff to provide those services. So this is, it's crazy. We have all sorts of fun and exciting opportunities here to enjoy not only shopping, but a restaurant environment and getting your hair done all in one fell swoop. Next to that, we've added over 500 new nutritional elements, components, and items to our store, including some local products here right from Indiana. That's just to name a few. There's all little details up and down the aisles that I could point out that would add to that list, but those are probably some of the larger new innovations.
That was Tom DeVries, General Manager and Senior Vice President at Market District, now frequent grocery shopper and longtime food biz veteran. Caterer Vicki Higuera offered her take on it.
I thought it was a really fun place. You could spend a lot of time there. You also can learn an awful lot there. I was really impressed with, and some of the integrity of the store. When I say integrity, the full equipment integrity, the philosophy behind what they're doing, the fresh fruit, the fresh cut fruit area is a prime example of what I'm trying to explain. There was that 10 by 10 room or 10 by 20 room that was refrigerated. People in there cutting and then sending it out a glass wall and sending it out. I could see them cutting my fruit, but it was the same price as what I was paying for the whole fruit, which to me is just good customer service. It is something they know what their consumer is looking for. And the same with all of the cooking kits. For people that are busy, but they still want fresh food, they want good food, and they know how to use those ingredients, it's a win-win situation.
What did you think about the layout of the store? You know, I think they're going for an experience sort of thing. Did it do what you think that they want it to do?
Outside of it looking like 12 Oaks Mall on December 23rd, there were a lot of people in there for grand openings. Oh, the store is massive. There's no doubt about it. But it was laid out in such that there were different hubs within the store. And so depending on what you wanted, you were guided to that area. I think they did that very well. I was very surprised at the commitment to local that they have. I don't know, like I said, I don't know that it's going to be my run in and grab a baguette and a bottle of wine and a and a thing of goat cheese and some fruit, but I think it is a wonderful addition to the massive amount of competition that we have in grocery right now.
What do you think about the market right now in Indianapolis? Is it, you know, too crowded? Are there too many of these kinds of stores?
I don't think so. There have been, as you know, I have been in specialty foods for 30 years, and there was a Safeway store in San Francisco back in the early 80s that was a small version of what Market District is. I think the metro area, as it grows, we will absolutely have more and more people that want to be a part of this. What we have, a good thing that Indianapolis has, is the region for trucking and how to get things here and get them here very easily. And when we say it's local, it's a 200-mile, that's a whole lot different than what California says, and they want Maine blueberries or Michigan blueberries. So for us, it's a whole lot easier. Some of the areas, especially the restaurant area and the cook area where you can bring your fish from, you bring it from over from the fishmonger, or, you know, the fish case, and bring it over and have somebody prepare it for you and you take it home. To me, that is the essence of great fast food. It's good, it's fresh, somebody has cooked it to order for you.
You mentioned earlier a little bit about local, and they do seem to have a strong commitment to local. We saw lots and lots of local products as we were looking through the store. What do you think about that?
Their specialty cheese area and the charcuterie area was chocked full of local stuff. That a lot of that, 2 years ago, you wouldn't have been able to find it on grocery store shelves. It was only at the farmer's market, and now it's there, as well as some of the produce that was there.
Any other things that you thought about, any surprises in the store that you didn't expect?
There's a place in Southern California called High Times. It's the mecca of liquor stores, and this Market District store was close behind. I was so surprised and so pleased to see so many local distilleries, whether it was Death's Door or 1205 or I can't even remember, Hotel Tango, all of the ones that were there. And they didn't have just one bottle of it. They had the whole line, which is, yeah, it might be grand opening. That 6 months from now, who knows what's going to be there. But they were representing the whole line. And that's the same with Tulip Tree in the cheeses. They had every single thing I've ever had from Tulip Tree. Smoking Goose was so well represented. And I think that means they came into the market. Remember, they haven't been here before. They're new. They came into the market. They did their homework. They know who's selling and who's good and who's doing what. And they reached out to those people.
We've been talking with Market District Senior Vice President and General Manager Tom DeVries, as well as local caterer and food industry biz veteran Vicki Higuera. Market District has recently opened at 116th and Illinois Streets, and you can find them online at marketdistrict.com. As the outdoor farmers market season winds down for the year, I've been thinking a lot about how local food, whether at farmers markets or at independent restaurants, can help define a community. I wanted to get a chef's perspective on those ideas as well. So Cerulean Executive Chef Alan Sternberg and I went to the Irvington Farmers Market earlier in the season to explore the market, to think about the neighborhood, and to consider how local food helps define a community. While we were there, we talked to Irvington residents and market vendors B.J. Davis and Andy Gilman of B Coffee Roasters. What this particular market is like compared to other markets?
Well, the Irvington market is one of our busiest markets. It only happens once a month, but it's so neighborhood-focused. Andy and I both live in Irvington, and I mean, everybody comes out for the market on market day. As you can see, there are tons of people, lots of arts and crafts, lots of Gus and his guacamole He always sells out every year, every month. And Rosie and her barbecue, sometimes she'll sell out too. These folks over here are Wicked Sugar. They're new. We just met them today, so. But lots of good stuff going on here. We always have live music, and it supports our garden club.
That was BJ Davis of B Coffee Roasters. Her business partner, Andy Gilman, commented on the market as well.
Yeah, it seems like a festival feel versus other farmers markets, which are just focused on, like, you know, everyone's lined up, go get the food, get, you know, your greens and your soap or whatever it is, and you walk around the circle and go. And Irvington has this, like, weird kind of, I don't know, like I said, festival feel to it.
It almost had, like, a gypsy feel, like, just walking up the, like, but no, it was cool. Like, there's a lot of different kinds of people here. There's you know, a little bit of everything, and it seems very fun. There's lots of kids. There's people enjoying the day, dogs. It's in the middle of a park instead of behind a school.
That's Chef Alan Sternberg of Cerulean Restaurant in Indianapolis, and he and I continued our exploration of food and community at the Irvington Farmers Market.
Let's wander around.
All right.
Okay.
Good seeing you guys.
Yeah, nice to see you.
Would you like to try a sample of popcorn?
Yeah, why not?
So it's really different from the downtown farmers market, you know?
Yeah.
So that one, actually, though, I see usually chefs at that one, you know, downtown.
Downtown? Yeah, I run into somebody, or a few people every time I go. So.
Yeah, me too.
I don't go enough, though. That's going to be one of my projects for the years, to be at the market more and be a lot more in touch with what's going on and cooking more in the moment.
Yeah, so what does that mean?
It means a lot of things. but for me, it's pretty much just figuring out, you know, what's at the peak right this second. I know that seems very simple, but it's almost a whole other labor to do that and you know, go to the market all the time and see what the farmers have.
So what are you looking at?
That saw is in the swirl.
Yeah?
Yeah. Just because, yeah.
What do you do with that?
Garnish.
Yeah?
Same with the swirl. So, red vein swirl.
Right.
I love because it looks gorgeous and tastes delicious.
It does.
So, I don't know. I like the green better to eat, but the red looks awesome.
Makes a pretty plate.
Yeah. How much are these?
All the herbs are $3 a pot.
Three?
Yeah.
Cool.
Tell me what you think about neighborhoods and food and the whole idea of culture that you've been talking about. And does one thing lead to another? I mean, you know, is food's a part of it, right? Of a neighborhood's culture, you think?
Yeah, for sure. One doesn't have to lead to the other. But I suspect when, you know, we always have, everybody has kind of those restaurants that their parents have taken them to that are just kind of an institution of some kind. And sometimes they're in a random town that's the only thing there. You know, but that's kind of that cultural hub for a small community. And I don't see any reason that the same thing can't be true for a city environment, you know. It's culture and food are both synonymous and independent of each other. Because, you know, if you're just eating fries and chicken nuggets and whatever, that there's no culture there, but that's still food. You know, it will sustain you. But when you have a place where the people really care, when you have, you know, a diner that might not serve the best food in the world, but, you know, the family that runs it pours their soul into it, you know, we're an ethnic family that's come here to make a better life, and they, you know, they cook food the best that they can cook it in the way that they were taught by their parents or grandparents or whatever, and trying to be authentic. There's a sense of culture. There's a sense of soul. I think soul leads to some culture. I think that when you have a group of passionate people about something similar, that's where you find the birth of some kind of cultural event.
So that's the beauty of neighborhoods, you know, like Irvington, that has an identity, you know, it has a feeling, you know, people feel a part of that. You know, they identify themselves with the neighborhood.
And then on a very rainy day earlier in the season, we stopped in for lunch at the Legend Cafe in Irvington and talked more about food and neighborhoods and culture and how it all ties together. What is it about food and restaurants and little neighborhood places like the Legend that we were just at? What is it about those kind of places that's important for a neighborhood?
I mean, I know you and I have talked several times about this, but it seems like it gives it an identity. It gives it somebody that people are invested in, monetarily, just community-wise. They know who you are. They see you all the time. You build a rapport. You build a relationship. You just kind of, it becomes part of your ritual. You know, I think a lot of the bigger issues with communities or neighborhoods is when people aren't invested, when they don't have, you know, the landmarks that they take their family to, where they don't have, you know, a sense of ownership about anything, and, you know, you're trying to get away from it. That's really where a lot of the issues start. So, you know, restaurants work really well for that because anybody can come into them. Anybody can go out to eat, you know, with place like the Legend, it's affordable. You know, it's not priced out of the neighborhood, so it's very much a working class type of establishment where you can go get some good food. It doesn't have to be life changing, but I mean it's good. You know, it tastes good. People feel welcomed when they're there. People obviously had a good time. I mean, the room was a buzz the whole time we were in there, and people just like going there. You ask why they're important, and you know, it's a place that's hospitable. It's a place where you go and you can kind of let go of, you know, the things that are happening in your life, and someone takes care of you. You know, you don't have to cook for yourself. You don't have to go get yourself a drink. It's very core to who we are in Indiana, I think, is we want to take care of people. We say please and thank you. We open doors for strangers. We, you know, I don't know how many times I've been sitting at a stop sign and me and someone else are both waving the other one on. But, I mean, that's who we are as people, you know. You don't see that as much outside of the Midwest, but it's very much a Midwest sensibility. But all those little neighborhood places, the reason they become neighborhood places and the reason they really kind of get their core demographic and their core customers is because they gain a rapport. They come there for the hospitality. They come there for food. They come there for all these reasons, and they build that rapport with a server or an owner or a cook or somebody, and it just feels more like family. You know, you see the same people there every Sunday, and you know you get to know the people that are sitting across from you, and you start friendships that way. You know, it's a place where a community can come together.
Well, no, so a while back we went to the farmer's market, too, in Irvington, which is kind of a different farmer's market. You know, it has a different vibe about it than, you know, say, oh, the Carmel or the Broderville farmer's market. So that's a community-building thing, too, don't you think?
Yeah, I mean, that was the thing that I really saw, and was that people were there for having fun. There's people that were there to promote just Irvington and really kind of, you know, lay claim and say, this is ours. We're proud of this. You know, you should be proud of this too if you live here. And they're trying to build everybody around an idea. You know, they're not trying to, oh, well, we'll dump $2 million into this, you know, community center, and then we'll just, you know, wipe our hands clean and move on to the next place, and everybody will love it, and it'll help the neighborhood. Like, that's not what's happening here. It's, you know, there's a row of restaurants right here, and, you know, the median's well manicured, and there's, again, a sense of pride in it. You know, people are putting money in it, people are putting their time into it, people are putting effort into it, and it's one of the reasons that this is one of the coolest neighborhoods in the city to me, is because it is very independent. You know, it's not, it has its identity. It has, oh, you're from Irvington, cool. You know, I've talked to you a couple times about, I used to come through here quite a bit, and there's a bike shop around here that's still here. And, you know, lots of people I guarantee that live here have been there for something, whether it's just, you know, they had a flat tire or, you know, a kid's first bike or whatever it is. And it's just one of those pieces of the community that, really kind of people can kind of rally behind. You know, Black Acres over here, there's a handful of restaurants, there's little things that are happening that are people fighting the good fight, and people around here saying, you know what, I like it, you know, I don't have to leave for everything, you know. That's very much where a lot of the neighborhoods are, I think, is you go there and there's nothing there, you know. There's no good restaurants. I'm not saying expensive or independent. Well, they're probably going to be independent, but there's no good restaurants. It's chains or it's nothing. Or it's the same food that's being shipped out of a Cisco truck or a U.S. food truck, whatever distributor. It's the same chicken tenders and french fries. It's, you know, there's no heart and soul there. But I think you get a restaurant where even if you're not producing the best food in the world, but you kind of have that sensibility, that community, that feel about you, that people can see that, you know, you're not just trying to give them whatever. You're going to care about it. You're going to care about the food, and you're going to do the best you can. You're going to care about the guests and give them the best experience that you can give them. You know, you're going to build a rapport. You're going to build a community.
I've been talking with local chef Alan Sternberg of Cerulean Restaurant in Indianapolis about building community through local food. I'll be exploring more neighborhoods with local chefs on future Eat Drink Indiana radio segments. So also today, I've got a food story for you of a different sort. And while it isn't necessarily local to here, it is a great story about local food and about building a local food culture. Like so many people here in central Indiana, I often go with my family to Michigan. We spend long weekends or vacations on a Lake Huron beach. I even shared my experience here this past summer fishing for lake trout, and that was a heck of a fish I landed, by the way. But just a couple of weeks ago, we went to a getaway cottage on Drummond Island, which is a good-sized island situated off the Upper Peninsula of Michigan. You go through the town of Hessel, Michigan to get there, and since we'd never actually stopped in that little town, this time we did. Now, I had a reason to stop in Hessel, Michigan, beyond the fact that it is a charming little town with a beautiful marina, one that hosts an annual antique wooden boat show every year in August. The Les Chenaux Antique Boat Show is named for the Les Chenaux Islands in the area. Now, the reason I was interested in the area is because of a new cooking school that opened last year. Les Chenaux Culinary School opened last fall with its first class of students who would study with executive director and chef Zach Schroeder and chef instructor Ryan Youngklaus. The students learn throughout the winter months, then they operate the school's farm-to-fork restaurant during the summer season to finish their training. I had heard about Les Chenaux Culinary School via social media, which is kind of cool. One of my posts about Northern Michigan prompted a suggestion that I check out the culinary school sometime. So a couple of weeks ago, I did just that. And I walked in the middle of a demonstration on preparing just foraged wild mushrooms. And I even got to sample some before talking with Chef Ryan about the school. So tell me again what kind they were.
Let's see, the second one was Hericium arenaceus. It's also known as lion's mane. And the other one was a giant puffball. We just cleaned the outside of that and then cut it down into little steaks and turned it in and just did a three-stage breading system with flour, egg wash, and breadcrumbs and just pan-seared it. And it was like eating melted cheese. It was unbelievable. Wow. So, yeah, really, really cool stuff.
This is so great.
Good. Yeah, you want to come back?
Oh, absolutely. Sure.
Our service area here. This is mainly gets used when the restaurant's open. We got our heat lamps and line coolers and all that. This is all of our line equipment, grill, flat top, pretty usual stuff for dish area. And it's back here where the students do a lot of their, during the day we give them the freedom to kind of do whatever they want to. We give them a prep sheet, prep items. They go find the recipes and then they go through and test them and then they give them to us to for our final approval.
Yep,
the production list is as it is called here.
Now tell me a little bit about how long you've been open.
Let's see, the school opened just a little bit over a year ago, back in September of 2015, or 14, sorry.
And yeah, so we just finished up. Our first graduates just graduated right after Labor Day. And then these ones started up September 14th. Yeah, and we'll have them training in the kitchen here until May 31st, and then that's the day that the restaurant opens. And then we'll go back in. That'll be their internship for 3 months, and then they graduate in the fall.
Oh, that's great. Yeah,
so we're just into our second year here, and we're loving it so far.
Oh, how fun is this? I'm so glad I got to stop by.
Yeah, we're glad to stop by. Yeah, so we got our that's our sous vide machine and our vacuum pack. We do a lot of messing around with the sous vide.
Yeah, do you like that?
Oh, yeah, it's a lot of fun. And I'm getting into more of the molecular gastronomy, things like that. And it's kind of a little side project I'm doing on my own and kind of incorporate a little bit here with the students as we go on.
Yeah, tell me about the restaurant.
The restaurant, let's see, we're open. Well, this last summer we were open 5 days a week and we did Sunday brunches, so actually 6 days. But this year we're going to be open 7 days a week, lunch and dinner. Not lunch the entire summer, probably just July and August, you know, mainly our busy times. We do our appetizers, soups, entrees. We have different desserts. We change our desserts up a lot. We offer a lot of good features. We bring in a lot of local produce from a lot of local farmers. We get all of our fish, our freshwater fish from King's Fish Market in Moran, just west of here. We bring in a lot of seafood. We just do all from scratch cooking, everything from our bread. Our pastas are rolled out fresh every day. Our sauces are made fresh to order. I mean, we're doing everything as from scratch as you possibly can. Yeah, so we really love it. And that's from my background. My background is fine dining. And in fine dining, it's all from scratch. You don't open something up out of a box and throw it on a plate. So there's a lot of care and a lot of love that goes into our dishes.
Now, tell me your name and a little bit of your background.
Yeah, my name is Ryan Junglis. I was born and raised in a small town east of Grand Rapids, Lowell, Michigan. That's where I spent the first 18 years of my life. Moved up to St. Ignace. My parents moved up here. Right after I graduated high school, I moved up. Got a job working for the Grand Hotel on a limb. Told them I had a lot of cooking experience, and I didn't have any. Within 2 years, I was a sous chef for their fine dining restaurant. So I went from no experience to the sous chef for the Jockey Club in a two-year period. And luckily, I knew Zach, and I worked with him up in Marquette, and we went to school together up there. So, I mean, I was spending a lot of time picking his brain and worked for some good chefs.
Did you go to culinary school? Is that what
I actually did not. I went for hospitality management and actually dropped out about a year and a half into it. And I was in, level classes that are 2 years, 2 years advanced for me, and it didn't really make much sense. So then from there, once I got the sous chef job at the Grand, I ended up going down to Florida for one winter. I worked for Amway Grand Plaza in Grand Rapids for a winter. Went out and was a sous chef at a resort out in Colorado, one of the largest ski resorts in Colorado, Copper Mountain. And then came back here, worked for Zach down in the Detroit area at a golf course. I worked for Michael Simon's Roast in downtown Detroit, made a lot of really good connections there. And then last summer was in contact with Zach and ended up this spring he landed me working here. I was working at a meat shop this winter down in the Lansing area and he said he wanted me to be his instructor, so here I am.
Oh, that's great. How fun is this?
Yeah.
This is very cool.
Yeah, and then back there we got our dry storage, our walk-in cooler and freezer. And nice beautiful tilt skillet.
Great stuff you got here.
Yeah, proofing box, a double oven. And here we're actually going to set up in Jack's garage. We got a six-burner range with a little flat top on it.
Oh, nice.
And then two ovens, so we're going to do all of our hot appetizers and stuff out of the back kitchen here.
Oh, how wonderful is this?
You know, now this, I'm going to mess around with it today, but I'm going to convert this, one of these two here, into a dry curing cooler. I'm going to start doing some charcuterie.
Oh, are you really? Yeah, that's very cool.
Yeah, tomorrow I'm going down to Ohio, just east of Toledo, between Toledo and Cleveland, to take an 8-hour course on charcuterie, curing meats and stuff.
Sure.
I'm doing that. I'm going to come back up here and reutilize my education. And actually on Friday, I'll get back up here either late Thursday or early Friday, and we're going to go out in the woods and do some mushroom foraging with one of the local experts. So,
oh, my goodness, how fun is that?
Yeah, so we're really excited.
We've been talking with Chef Instructor Ryan Jungklaas of Le Chanot Culinary School in Hessel, Michigan. For more information on the school and its mission, go to lcculinary.org. And for just one more thing this week, I have to fill you in on the League of Lattes. Now, I got to have the experience this past year of judging some latte art throwdowns. If you're not familiar with latte art, well, just imagine trying to make a design out of the steamed milk while pouring it into a cup of espresso. Talented baristas, though, can create a number of designs, hearts, flowers, swans, all created by pouring the milk in oh so carefully. The cups of espresso, the lattes are beautiful, it's delightful to drink, and that kind of focus just elevates the coffee culture in Indianapolis. And that's the focus of the Latte Art Throwdowns. Local coffee roasters BJ Davis and Andy Gilman have worked hard the past year to foster more interaction and camaraderie among local baristas by organizing the Latte Art Throwdowns. Andy, the self-appointed League of Lattes commissioner, created rules and a bracket-style ranking system to keep track of how all of the baristas have finished in the competitions. Now, the competitions rotated among local coffee shops, and the season wrapped up with a grand finale throwdown on Monument Circle.
I have been trying to build barista community in Indianapolis for several years, but Andy came on board, and all of a sudden it seems like the coffee culture in Indianapolis has just exploded over the last 2 years, and we have more and more people getting more interested in coffee and quality coffee, and the latte art is just kind of like the icing on the cake. The cake is the best part, which is the coffee, but that doing that latte art, it's like that little bit of edge that gives you something that people remember and talk about, and it's really a lot of fun for the baristas. So we're trying to build barista culture.
Her business partner, Andy Gilman, explains how he came up with the League of Lattes idea and its scoring, which is based on IndyCar point system.
Started a long time ago. BJ and I at Beat Coffee Roasters, we were slogging it through, trying to make better coffee for Indianapolis. And we would do a latte art invite competition. We get a couple people in our shop, but there's never a critical mass. Past couple years, more people have opened up. And there's been more interest in coffee just nationwide. But still, culture for coffee in Indianapolis is still someone comes in your coffee shop and they say, can I have a caramel macchiato? And I say, okay, that's fine. And they say, oh, is your macchiato in your board? I have to say, no, it's not a caramel macchiato. I'm talking about a 2-ounce drink. Trans espresso is softened with a little bit of milk foam. And then I can do a caramel drink, but not that's different. They go, oh, so there's education. And that's fine. We're happy to educate. We're friendly about it. But, so, I want to make a better barista culture for a better coffee culture in all of Indianapolis. I was at a coffee fest in St. Louis last year, and I went to a talk about building coffee culture in your city. And essentially, the speaker used Kansas City as his example. And people don't think of Kansas City's coffee, but it's amazing coffee. And so the question was, well, what'd you do? And his thesis ended up being the barista culture built the coffee culture. And he said, well, they had two unique things. They had several different roasters, but they also had this guy who does machine repair, and he built a space in his front of his workshop, which had coffee equipment, and he made a barista petting zoo. It was just anyone could come, and he started hosting events there. And baristas from the city, who normally don't mingle with each other, were meeting each other. They were talking. They were like, oh, let's try this machine together. And he started doing this just as a thing. And the barista culture exploded. People started caring about what they were doing more. And so I came back with this nugget that I wanted to do more. And so I got had this conversation about doing this. And like I said, I tried before. The passage just hadn't taken off. There wasn't a critical mass. So I decided to do I looked up to see if the name League of Lattes was out there. And there, I found it. You know, I got it on Twitter and Instagram. I bought the website.
Oh, my gosh. So that URL was available, right?
Right. So I got it's a labor of love. And so I started this. The first time what I did is I printed off a bunch of flyers, took them to all the coffee shops. I did it at my coffee shop, at Invitation. And why did I start it? I wrote up what I funnily, just for fun, called the charter. But I have rules, and I talk about it. And part of what I define it as is it. You know, we roast coffee, we have a coffee shop. I try to put my hand over my logo when I go, and it's like, I'm doing Andy, I'm not selling to you. I want to make a neutral
place. Now, we don't have a neutral place like they did in Kansas City, so I wanted to rotate coffee shops and have different coffee shops like host it to continue to make it neutral, and then we also get everybody's home. And so we meet each other, we get the coffee community having friendly competition, but also like, wow, latte art is this visual thing, something you can easily grasp, and it's like the core of what the barista is doing is pouring a latte. So that's why I started to like focus on latte art, and there is a tradition across the country of what's called Thursday night throwdowns, and you can look at hashtags on Instagram, TNT, and you'll find coffee. It's this thing that people have been doing for years, so that's why a Thursday night. And so to continue it, I didn't want to just stop with one. I wanted to do something to draw them in, bring it back, and to build it. So I thought of this idea of doing a season, like a sports season. And so we're doing it 9 months. We're doing last Thursday of every month at a different coffee shop hosting it. And with that, there's a prize for every night. And then as we do these heads-up bracket-style thing, and as you place through the night, I take the score, and I'm using the points from the Indianapolis 500.
So you have standings, right?
So you have a standing throughout the season, and depending on how you place throughout the and the thing is also by doing that, and using like the scores of the Indianapolis 500, we're baristas. We have lives, sometimes you have to close the shop, you might be able to make it. So let's say you're doing a good job, you got second place, or third place, you got 35 points, but you miss a week. When you come back, you could possibly do very well again and get back in the stand runnings. And so we're going to do a grand prize at the end.
We've been talking with BJ Davis and Andy Gilman of B Coffee Roasters in Indianapolis. The big winner for the League of Lattes season was Ross Bemis of Quill's Coffee. Now look for the league to start up again in January. And you can follow League of Lattes on Twitter and Instagram. You've been listening to Eat Drink Indiana Radio on WFYI HD2 The Point. I'm your host, Jolene Ketzenberger. Thank you so much for tuning in this week, and thanks also to our guests, Suzanne Literal of Literally Divine Chocolates, Tom DeVries of Market District, caterer Vicki Higuera of Three Figs, BJ Davis and Andy Gilman of Bee Coffee Roasters, Chef Alan Sternberg of Cerulean Restaurant in Indianapolis, and Chef Instructor Ryan Jungkloss of Le Chanot Culinary School. And thanks also to producer John Ketzenberger for helping to bring you Eat Drink Indiana Radio.